Alex Kim Gordon, Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is a beautiful Tuesday afternoon here in the city of Chicago. And it's not too shabby on Wall Street either. John Najarian is with us, joins us most Tuesday afternoons. Dow's up, what, better than 210 points this afternoon, John?
Yeah, the Dow's up 213 points, S&P 500 27.5 points, the NASDAQ about 1.9%. If you've got investments in the market, which most of your listeners do, this is a good day for you.
And so I read earlier that new home sales were up big in April, not so much here in the Midwest, but across the country anyway. Is that what's fueling this or what's behind this big jump today?
It's been a combination of things. Certainly that is a good thing, the fact that homes are being built at a greater pace, and they even revised some others significantly higher as well. The previous month's report of home sales, I think, went from 511,000 homes to 531,000. So that's a decent little boost to the previous number. Also, the median prices for homes being sold. There were some of the luxury builders that were, quite frankly, kind of worried that they weren't going to see that kind of boost. And instead, $321,000 was the median price, and just a month ago it was $297,000. So that's a pretty good number as well. I think that buoyed the markets in the early trade.
These are always volatile numbers, right? The month-to-month new home sales, can we read very much into them?
I try not to, and I'd quite frankly rather be in many of the folks that would supply the home builders rather than the home builders themselves. So, for instance, like USG, for instance, or Fastenal, F-A-S-T, they make a lot of the stuff that basically helps you put a building together. And whether it's for industrial or retail construction supplies, that company, I think, would be one that I'd focus on more. It's only about $4 off the 52-week high and better than, I think, $11 or $12 off the lows.
Why do you focus on them more? They're more, it's a steadier line?
Yep, I think so. It's steadier. They're not as much part of that volatility that you mentioned accurately, Stephen, where you can have one month because of weather or something. People don't put up nearly as many homes, or permits aren't drawn because the weather in one part of the country or another didn't cooperate. That affects the home builders an awful lot more than it does the Home Depots, the Lowe's, or the Fastenals, some of the suppliers, the USGs that I mentioned.
You know, I got a little travel business on the side, and I've got a group in Italy right now. I've got a group from the Irish American News going to Ireland tomorrow. It's a good time to travel to Europe when you look at how the dollar's doing against the euro.
Yeah, I mean, right now, in fact, it's down to 111. So that's an attractive rate. It's been that way for a while. I mean, you know, it's been as low when I think at the height of the worries about Brexit, which isn't over yet, but you've got Bremain, which would be Britain remaining in the European Union, or Brexit.
I haven't heard Bremain before.
It's up 55% to 45% on the betting sites as far as will they remain. But here's kind of an interesting twist on that, Stephen. There's a big festival every year. It's called Glastonbury.
Yep.
And you're probably familiar with it. The big, huge music fest draws hundreds of thousands of folks, sort of like along the lines of Woodstock, and happens every year. The 22nd of June to the 26th this year, that falls right in the time when that Brexit vote would occur, and the younger people are by far more likely to be voting to stay in the union than are some of the older folks. So this could actually skew that vote.
Wow.
And they're already talking now about how much influence this could have and whether or not they have to set up voting booths out there at the Glastonbury. As far as other stuff, though, today, while I let you catch your breath, the Herbalife, it got halted today for a while, as did Monsanto. Herbalife was basically moving to the upside very quickly because people thought that maybe they'd have a settlement with the government on whether or not they're a multi-level marketer, which for the most part they are.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that. Sorry about that, pal.
No problem.
I want to go back to the Brexit thing because you said that the younger people are more likely to vote to stay than the older people. And I might have thought that was the other way around. Why is that? Because they've always lived in the European Union, perhaps?
Yes. Because of that, because of the freedom of travel through the union and freedom of work anywhere in that union, the older you are and living in Great Britain, the more prideful you might be about the country itself, and the more worried you might be about the changes that could continue in Great Britain if you have the open borders policy that the Eurozone really has.
Well, we're I'm sorry, go ahead, John.
That's the focus, though. The older you are, the more likely you are to vote to break away from the Euro and be an independent Great Britain.
I guess the older you are, you remember the days before, that makes a little sense. While we're in the European Union, let's go to Paris, and I don't know if you have much to say on this or not, but I just want to point out that what's going on at Google, apparently there's a big tax raid there today, more than 100 tax and police detectives had sort of raided their headquarters in Paris. I mean, I don't know, does that show up on Wall Street, or is there any impact there, do you think?
There hasn't really been a lot of concern by folks about that yet, but as you say, depending on what kind of charges they come up with, could impact them. But again, for companies Google or Alphabet size, fines like the kind that we talked about earlier with Herbalife, potentially a $200 million fine that they may pay, or a settlement, if you will, those don't move the needle when you're as large a company as Google for more than a day or so. So I wouldn't anticipate that this would be too damning for Google, even if the French authorities find something. Stock's up 2% today. It's better than double the market.
Well, so that tells you something. All right, John Najarian's on a phone line with us. You got a real quick stock tip for us today?
Sure. Take a look at Synchrony Financial. This one was split off out of General Electric, and it's a banking stock. It's up about 2% now. We highlighted it, bought a bunch of it, and put it in the halftime portfolio on CNBC as well. So we saw unusual activity, saw a lot of institutions getting involved. We decided to coattail right with them, Steve.
Excellent. John Najarian, great to talk to you, and thanks for filling there while I was aspirating on my coffee a little bit. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thank you, Steve.
We'll talk again next week. That's John. Follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is in the studio from DNA Info. Andrew, welcome back.
Hi, Steve.
We talk about openings and closings here during the program. And I wanted to let's start on the lakefront. I think that mic needs to be pointed to you a little bit more. But
already?
Let's start on the lakefront on the north side. And there's this development or this proposal for a land surfing center.
Right. So this is Chicago's Surf Park, and it's developed by a guy named Casey Hoos, and it's basically a pool with waves, creates waves in it, and you can actually surf in there.
I got to tell you, when I was reading about this, I didn't really get what land surfing was.
Uh-huh.
So I Googled it, and it wasn't definitive. I mean, there were people with sails on land, there were people with skateboards, but this is you're in a pool. And it's just a simulated big wave.
Right, and so the people with the most skills, they can stand up, but you can just kind of lay down on the board and hold on, and it costs about $40 an hour. And you've seen these various places around the Midwest. In Wisconsin Dells, they have a few of them, and people love them.
So to get something on the lakefront, there's usually quite a lot of opposition, right?
Right. So he makes a deal with the Park District. The Park District is interested in it, you know, in some sort of revenue-sharing deal. So first he thinks, okay, well, I'll put it at North Avenue Beach, because it basically has to build a pool, and it's got to have mechanics. And so he decides North Avenue Beach. Well, that turns out there's too much traffic there already. He thinks about Montrose Beach, and there's a bird sanctuary there, and the birders are kind of upset about that.
Sure.
So he moves down a little bit. He's still looking at Montrose Beach, but a little bit further north. And so he recently had a meeting with the neighbors in Uptown. which a lot of developers do in Chicago. When you're trying to develop something in a neighborhood, you often have to go to a neighborhood group and not so much get their permission, but their support. Because a lot of them are connected to the aldermen.
And, well, we talk a lot about that, you and I.
Yeah, that's right. And it's kind of an interesting part of Chicago. If you, some aldermen put a lot of stock in these groups and they try to appease them and try to use them as sort of barometers for what the neighborhoods want. Anyway, so he goes to the uptown meeting and some people say, you know, it's too busy around here now. There's not enough parking for the people who just go to the beach. It's, you know, the whole thing is too expensive, $40 an hour. So the guy says, well, I'll tell you what, I'll fix the bathrooms, the public bathrooms at on the lakefront, because evidently they're kind of, they need to
public
they need
bathrooms
some repair
on the lakefront.
Right.
Right.
So he says, you know, if you let me, if you give me this support, I'll give you new sinks and toilets and mirrors. And they did not vote on it yet, but I think he won over some people.
So it's the idea of what can I give you to give to get what I need.
Right. And you kind of see this in various neighborhoods around Chicago from developers. Usually it's a matter of more parking spaces or fewer apartments or something like that. But increasingly, it's developers are contributing to the local park system.
Well, we'll see how that goes. We'll follow that. Myron and Phil's was, well, notorious is not the right word. Infamous, maybe not. You know, when Myron and Phil's burned, I got a call indirectly from the Speaker of the House.
Really?
What do you know about the fire?
Really?
Because, you know, that was a place where those guys went.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's been closed for a few years now.
Right.
And they finally got plans to put something else on the site.
Sure. So this was at 3900 West Devon, an old famous restaurant in Chicago, opened in 1971. Myron and Phil Friedman, two brothers, ran it for a long time. It was basically, I was never there, but it's been described to me as kind of like a supper club kind
of
thing.
Yeah, right.
You know, chopped liver and
I love
skirt steak. And that kind of thing.
Yeah, the piece in DNA Info says, known for its chopped liver pate, white fish, skirt steak, and salad dressing. I think that says it all.
Right. So that was the big attraction back then. It burned down in 2013. The son of Myron has moved some of it to Wildwood Tavern in Niles, but the building has still been there. And recently they tore down the building, so Myron and Phil's is long gone, permanently gone, and to be replaced by Sacred Learning, which is an Islamic school and mosque.
Wow. So there's a mosque moving into where Myron and Phil's was.
Right. 10,000 square feet, served 500 families, and it really is kind of a reflective of the ever-changing city.
So it'll be another community builder, just a little bit different. Not
right.
No white fish, but Friday prayers instead.
Yeah, halal food, maybe.
They'll have a card out front.
Yeah,
Andrew Herman,
right.
Thanks for coming by.
Okay.
That's Andrew Herman from DNA Info Chicago. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Suzanne Mushin and I are here, and we're just going to whistle.
That felt like super happy music.
It's a whistle day. It's a nice
totally.
Little beautiful day. Suzanne's the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNplus.com. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I am just been so busy. My son is graduating tomorrow. We've got a party in 2 weeks. I'm fertilizing the lawn last night. I'm doing this. And I don't have any time to myself, Suzanne. I don't have any time to myself.
Am I supposed to feel badly about that?
You're supposed to tell me I'm wrong.
You are wrong. Well, so you're one of those very involved dads also. So let me give you creds for that, right? So you do have stuff outside of work, right?
Know.
That was what I just said could be read or heard as a little patronizing.
Yeah, I'll
right?
take it, but I don't know if it's true.
Patronizing? I don't know. What would it be if I criticized you?
That's okay.
Anyway, point being, a very interesting study was just released by a woman named Laura Vanderkam, and I love the title of her book, Steve. So the title is I Know How She Does It. Remember there was that book, I Don't Know How She Does It?
Sure, sure.
Right. I Know How She Does It, How Successful Women Make the Most of Their Time. And so she has this time tracker tool. You can just Google time tracker, Laura Vanderkam, and it'll come right back up. So she tracked her activity over the course of a year, 8,784 hours. And she had all sorts of narratives around her life. I work 50 to 60 hours a week. I never have time for myself. I don't work out. I don't get to just spend time reading, right? And does this sound familiar?
If I could just have one night.
One night.
We're just one night.
Right.
And we do think that, don't we? And we
all the time.
And why is it? Is that because we're wired to feel sorry for ourselves? I mean, I don't want to put too much of a judgment on it.
Well, but I think that this meme of I'm so busy has become a badge of pride for a lot of people. Right. And women in particular, I think they almost like to say to other women, I'm so busy. And so this woman says, well, let's find out, actually, how busy you really are.
I love it. So she looked at how many hours she worked over the year, the course of the year.
Yeah.
She averaged 37.4 hours a week.
And not 50 to 60.
Now, there's a little caveat there in that she factored in her vacation time.
She did.
So she was working probably more than 40 hours a week when she was working.
But her main point, which is so interesting, is you have to look at it over time. It's not about a particular day or particular week. She also said, look, if I look at the course of the year, I got 8 massages. I spent 230 hours working out. I spent 327 hours reading books, right? If you really do look at your time this way, her point was maybe we're not quite as busy
as we think.
As we think.
Okay, so here's from her essay. There are 168 hours in the week. If I worked 37.4 and slept 51.8, this left 78.79 hours for other things.
Exactly.
I spent 9 hours a week on household errands and housework.
Mm-hmm.
Some driving around, 7.8 hours a week driving around.
Right.
So we have a lot more time than
we think.
We
have more time than we think.
And there's another study from, was it the Department of Labor? I had it here somewhere. June 2011 monthly labor review found that people estimating 75-hour plus work weeks were off on average of about 25 hours.
Right, about 25 hours per week, right?
I mean, come on.
So this has to do with... What is the story we're telling ourselves? And why are we telling that story, which was a good question? Why do we need to say
because
that we're so busy?
And that's the key. It's a story that we're telling ourselves.
And I think, now look, you could also say, well, who has time to track their time, right? But I would say, I think it's an interesting study. What if you just do it for a week? Or a couple days, just do it Monday through Friday and see what happens.
Yeah.
I bet you'd have a different story.
That's funny. I mean, it's an awareness exercise, really.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I'm your awareness exercise every week.
You are an exercise for me, but it's not awareness. Let's go to Sweden, where they barely work at all.
Can you imagine? There are sometimes when I read about Europe and I just think to myself, like France and stuff, man, they've got like their lifestyle figured out.
They're striking again. Wait, they're back at work. Vacation's over
exactly.
So they can strike?
And they always seem to be doing something that we as Americans say, oh, that would never work here. So, for example, in Sweden, they instituted a six-hour workday. They were encouraging companies to do this. A bunch did. And, of course, you have all sorts of theories. Well, I'm going to lose, you know, wages. I'm going to have to hire people to fill in. Our company's revenue is going to go down.
Productivity is going to be terrible.
Okay, the opposite on almost every single count. And the main takeaway was, people are more productive when they're happier the rest of the time.
Right. So it's the sort of it's B to the A that we started with in a
way.
Yes.
Because, well, that's good.
Thank you. If you've got 6 hours instead of an open-ended day,
right,
you're not going to mess around at that meeting.
Exactly.
You're not going to kill time. I mean, you know what? Frankly, that's the way my day is around here now. It's a little more compressed.
Yeah.
So I'm not usually here for 8 hours.
Right.
I do stuff at home and before work and all that. But every moment I'm here, I'm like, I'm going to get this done now.
Absolutely.
So that I can leave here
right
and do more stuff at
you
home.
You probably don't go to certain meetings whether or not you need to be there.
We have a daily meeting, and I'm the guy saying, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's
start.
Get it done.
Right.
So they're happier. They're more productive.
And they stayed in their jobs longer. There was less turnover. They had less health problems. I mean, the benefits went on and on and on. And it does, like, once again, B to the A, back us up to ask the question, how are we working in this country? And is it working? Is how we're working working? Sweden says no.
Yeah, well, I tend to agree. I think there's a lot of wasted downtime.
Yeah.
And while we go home, then and say how busy we were
right.
And how we don't have time to make dinner.
And we act like these aren't choices we're making.
Again, though, that would never happen here.
Six-hour
work days.
Right.
Instead, we dwell on Chewbacca masks and things like
this
that.
This was such a beautiful story, I think, this week. And it really is starting to blossom. It's taking on sort of a life of its own. So Candace Payne, a woman who lives in Wisconsin, shops at Kohl's, created this video. It looks like, if you haven't seen it, it is beyond fantastic.
You know, can I tell you, I've only seen it. I haven't heard it.
Well, this
so
is
it doesn't
like
really
you don't
translate,
listen to my podcast.
Is it still your... I love your podcast,
yeah.
The Big Payoff at WGNplus.com.
Exactly. Thank you. See, or an app on the app. Anyway, point is, it looks like she puts her phone on her dashboard or something. So she's really talking to camera. And she says that she's just gone to Kohl's and her kids love Star Wars and she's bought them this Chewbacca mask. She puts it on and the mask is, first of all, spectacular. I mean, it really fits her face and she starts opening her mouth and every time she does it roars and she's cracking herself up. And the interesting thing about the what this video means, Steve, is that, first of all, we just must need this. I mean, if 130 million Americans are watching this video,
it was a mindless laugh at its best.
A mindless laugh. Like, let's just give ourselves a moment, people. Just the Donald Trump, the elections, like, let's give ourselves a good laugh, a belly laugh. And then the thing that happens after this is this woman is now kind of famous. I mean, her life has changed.
Well, what I like is, and then we'll get back to Donald Trump because our time's up. What I like is what Kohl's did. I mean, let's take the business angle of
it. Super smart
they
business.
They jumped on this, and they're really capitalized, and it's working out for them,
too. Oh, yeah. 30 million views in the first day to this video that they did, going over to her house, handing her a gift certificate for $2,500.
So they were nimble enough to see this was taking off.
Super smart.
And then they produced a video on it that was in their, I think web traffic was up 100%.
101%. Web traffic up, and they did the right thing. They were nice. They were funny. They gave her shopping points, and then they gave her kids more Star Wars stuff. I mean, it was all on brand, right, which was what was so great. And I think there are so many good lessons here, not the least of which is, you know, if you're a business, be nimble, be smart, because the people using your products are out there.
And we want to feel good.
We want to feel good, right?
That was sort of the theme this week. We need to feel good. We're doing what we need to feel good. We just don't feel good about feeling good.
Yeah. Now the weather's changing. Maybe that'll help. But we must have all needed a good laugh.
I think so. Suzanne Muchen, the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGMPlus.com. Nice to see you again. We'll see you next week.
Good to see you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And I've been talking, we've done a few segments on these new overtime rules from the Obama White House just because it interests me, and I hope it does you as well. We've talked about it from the worker angle, but maybe not as much from the employer angle. Adam Ochstein is the founder and CEO of StratEx, a human resources technology consulting firm, and a guest from time to time here on the Business Lunch. Welcome back, Adam.
Thanks, Steve. It's been a really long walk on this cold weather we have out here today.
It's brutal, you coming across the street. I saw you time it so you had the light perfectly. Didn't have to be out in that brutal sunshine any more than you needed to. Tell me about this new overtime rule, because I tend to think it's a good thing. I mean, in my world, I see workers being abused, you know, selling jeans or whatever, being called managers and sort of being used in some ways. Now, I know other people say, and they have good points, that this is going to have a real impact on business. And that's kind of what we're going to hear to talk about. So if you're a business owner, you see this rule takes effect in December, what's the first thing you do?
First thing I do is I probably panic, which like most business owners do when they see government passing new regulations.
Right.
And then you take a step back and you realize that, you know what, let me take off my owner's hat for a second. $25,000, $26,000, $27,000 a year is not a lot of. It's not fair pay. It is antiquated. It's old. It needed some updates.
So under the old rule, if you worked $23,000 $23,000 or less.
You were, if you made over $23,000
or more, right.
You were exempt from overtime if you're classified,
So they could call you a manager pay you $23,000 and make you work 60 hours a week.
Or 70 or 80.
Right. And so now the Obama rule is up to what, 47?
Pretty much doubles it. It's 47 and change, right?
Okay.
You know, and in a city like Chicago, New York, San Francisco, probably, it's not going to be a challenge for an organization. But if I'm in small town Ohio or Nebraska, maybe $47,000 is a big bump and a stretch for that organization. So I think they could have done it maybe on a regional basis, on a cost of living, and said, what's fair for this market? And if I'm going to really classify someone as a manager or make them exempt for overtime, what is a fair salary to pay that person?
Okay, but so let's say you've got someone who makes $30,000. And they are a manager for you, and they put in 60 hours a week. Now you're going to owe them 20 hours a week in overtime.
Overtime.
So how do you adjust? Do you hire someone else at a lesser pay? Do you move around responsibilities, or do you pay the 20 hours overtime?
I think there is also a stigma to hourly versus salary. So the first thing you don't want to do as a manager think, okay, you have to punch in and out of a time clock, and now you're an hourly folk, right? So
there's more status associated to salary.
Exactly. There's more status there. And then if you think of the second point, there is war for good talent. So it's not so easy to say I'm going to find another manager and divide the duties up and have them each work 30 hours. not that easy. So if you have a really good manager, especially in a service-based business, you want that person on the retail floor, on the restaurant floor. You want them there as much as possible. So it becomes a business decision, and I think at the end of the day, those organizations are going to say, you know what, I'm going to pay the person the $47,000
rather than take some responsibility away from her.
Or take a look and say, maybe they're not working, maybe they're not working more than 50 hours a week, and I'm going to say, you know what, you're going to fill an honor-based timesheet every week, put 50 hours on wherever you think you worked, and I'll pay you the 10 hours of overtime because it's less than the 47.
Well, you know, the theme of the show has turned out, and I didn't realize it till we're finishing, but has been time and our awareness of time, really, because I talked to Suzanne Mushin earlier about this woman who tracked her time. And she thought she was so busy, and then when she tracked it and looked at it, she realized she wasn't nearly as busy. And there was a study that said people who said they worked 75 hours a week really worked about 50.
Yeah.
So we're not maybe putting in as much time as we think. So some of these bosses who think their employees are working 60, they might find out they're actually going to pay them for an extra 12.
No doubt. And I think the biggest underlying or unintended consequence of this, and it always existed, is we all walk around with smartphones now. And so now I'm responding to emails from clients.
There's no going home.
But now that I'm working. Right. So am I going to track that time?
So what do you do there?
I mean, you can have this is where culture and compliance clash, right? Because the culture is we're in a service-based economy. Be responsive to your clients. But then I'm also going to tell you that I can't have you do that because you're going to be going over 40 hours a week. And I don't want you working. And how am I going to track that time?
Right.
And then 6 months later, you're no longer working for me. And it's a he said, she said. And the next thing you know, I'm going to settle with them. So
that's the danger. That's the problem, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll see how that works. Adam Ockstein, the CEO of Stratix, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
I look forward to next time. Be careful crossing the street, will you?
I definitely will.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.